Hey guys, it's Alan. I just wanted to come in here at the beginning of the episode. I haven't done one of these in a while, but I wanted to say that one of the major sort of dumb things that we talk about in Escape Chats that we didn't mention in this recap episode was Terry the Blanket, which is Rigel's sort of silk gold blanket that he has in his quarters at all time, and we love it, and I came up with the name, and it's Terry, and keep an eye out for Terry every week, because we're going to talk about it, and it's going to be great, and we love you. Here's the episode. Bye! Welcome to Escape Chats, a podcast about Farscape. I'm your host, Alan, and I'm here with Magellan.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, man, it's episode 12, the season one recap episode.
Yeah.
Whoa, yeah, man, we're doing a new thing this week. We finished season one of Farscape last week, if you're following along with us at home, and we wanted to take a break before hopping right into season two, and take a day to just reflect and to talk about what's been, what we think is coming, what we liked, what we didn't like, all sorts of things.
And we also want to make this an easy jumping on point if people either have just watched the first season or something and they found us and are like, oh, I already watched all those episodes. Let's just see what these guys think of season one. Or if you're one of those people that doesn't feel the need to watch every single episode of every show and you want to do the quick version of season one, this episode is for you. In that sense,
yeah,
as well.
It's got a lot of appeal for a lot of people. Or if you watched it a long time ago and you know the episodes and you don't want to listen to the individual ones, you want to just jump ahead.
Yeah.
Or if you're just catching up with us now and you don't want to listen to 11 episodes of silliness. So, yeah, we're gonna go over what's happened so far and we're gonna talk about a lot of stuff. So, where do you want to start, John?
Well, I think we should start with a very basic overview of what the plot was, what the main
right
huge story was for this season.
Yes. So season one, episode one, premiere starts pretty hot. We're on Earth and we're introduced to a guy named John Crichton. He's an astronaut. And
how would you describe this Mr. Crichton?
I would say he's the most generic white guy in the world.
Okay,
he's
good.
Like fairly buff. He's a little bit southern. He is an astronaut. Like he's defined by what he does and what he aspires to, and not by anything like physical about him.
Gotcha.
He's just a dude. He's got a weird like brow. He kind of looks caveman-esque a little bit. Like a little bit. Whenever he doesn't,
I like Ben Browder, and I feel like we muss him up a little bit every once in a while. We're probably harder on him than on everybody else, but he's cool.
He's good. And the thing is, he really comes into his own as an actor.
Yeah.
And he's done a lot of amazing work, and I like the character. I just have trouble identifying him by anything.
He's a little goofy as a man.
Right. And I'm also just jealous that he's like fairly handsome and kept his good looks throughout the years, and so I get to...
Right.
Play the sort of ripper from the comfort of my own home. So John Crichton is an astronaut in we're to assume the near future of our time, because things are like a little bit more futuristic and people go to space sometimes.
Well, it's actually the present of, I think it was literally 1999.
Oh, was it?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, so then yeah, this show started in 1999 and it is, I guess, around then. And the first episode actually premiered March 19th, 1999, so it's right in the middle of there. And John Crichton has a ship called the Farscape 1, and he plans to use it to try to essentially slingshot himself through a wormhole and see if it allows him to... Is it like he's trying to do a trip around the Earth?
They're just testing wormholes. They're just trying to figure out how wormholes work.
Right. And so he tries testing this wormhole. We're introduced to his father, who becomes important later. And we're introduced to his friend DK Knox, who is not going to become important later. Douglas DK Knox. And they're basically just there for him to have someone to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes through this wormhole and he finds himself in space. But he also finds himself in a little bit of a predicament because he has collided with another ship and caused quite an accident on the other ship. And so he's in this strange world, and there's this weird ship, and he doesn't know what's going on. And how does he get onto the other ship? The Moya.
So I believe they pick him up.
Yes.
And the person that he collides into when he first exits the wormhole, we find out later, is the brother of a pretty important military commander.
Bylar Krais.
Bylar Krais, who becomes the villain of this season. Not always visible, but he's always in the back of our minds if we're being chased by Krais.
Always present, always mentioned in the theme song.
Yes. So John Crichton eventually comes to a ship that turns out to be an escaped prison transport containing really four other aliens of note. They are Dargo, Ka Dargo, who's a warrior type. He's got cool tentacles.
He's a Luxon.
He's got a great nose. Cool sword.
Played by Anthony Simcoe. He's got a cool sword called a Qualtha Blade.
Qualtha Blade. Really dope. We have Zoto Zahn, who's blue.
She's a Delvian.
And a priest. She's a very calm, sort of religious figure. And then we have Rigel the 16th, who's a puppet. And he's a small puppet.
Which is the first sort of notable thing about this show, which is that it was partly, at least, worked on by the Jim Henson Company. Uh-huh. And Brian Henson specifically worked. That he considers a lot of the show to be his baby. And Rigel is the first major puppet that we see. Well, it's Rigel and it's one other
puppet. Right, the fourth alien who's on board Moya by the name of Pilot. And he pilots the ship, which is a living ship. It's an organism.
Named Moya.
And named Moya. And Pilot is the link between the crew and Moya, the link of communication and of operation of the ship. And he also a puppet, very large puppet. We don't always see him physically, but usually he pops in on the holographic intercom thing and says something. So that's cool. And then
Pilot's great.
Yeah, sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you can go ahead because I know what you're going to say.
So then over the course of the pilot episode premiere, we end up on a planet, some kind of market planet or something. It's been a while since we watched it. John Crichton ends up meeting a woman by the name of Aaron Sun. She's a soldier in the Peacekeeper Army, which is essentially an army that is, I believe they're hired out by planets to resolve conflicts. That's their Correct. Thing. So they are, you can think of them as kind of...
Space Nazis.
Space what?
Space Nazis?
I suppose that, I mean, they are like vaguely fascist, but in terms of how they operate, they're more like they're kind of like a huge mercenary army, aren't they?
Yeah.
In the sense that they solve disputes and police things so that other people don't have to, but they don't answer to anybody else. Which is the
concept of space Nazis comes less from their structure and more from the fact that their primary color scheme is lots of red and black, and they all wear lots of pointed shoulders, and a lot of them are angry, brutal people, and they raise their children up from a very young age to be warriors and killers.
Right. So Aaron Sun is one of those. She's played by Claudia Black, who's a very good actress. She is. And she is declared irreversibly contaminated by her commanding officer, Bylar Krais, because of her contact with John Crichton, who they determine is not a Sabbatian, even though the Sabbatians, the species who are peacekeepers, look a lot like humans. They're physiologically different. So Aaron Sun is cast out from the life that she knows, and John essentially forces the rest of Moya's crew to take her with them, because she doesn't have any other kind of life. She agrees to go with them. They leave, and they set off on some cool adventures together.
Space adventures.
Series of space adventures. We don't need to recap every single episode, because that would be crazy, and that was the show that we did.
We did that.
But basically, towards the end of the season, we get to a point where they come into contact with Krace again, but we also meet a new villain by the name of Scorpius, who, how would you describe Scorpius in three words?
A bondage zombie.
The word bondage speaks so much that you don't even need the third word. You can waste it on a. That's good.
Yes.
Scorpius is a bondage zombie. I'd say a bondage lizard.
Yeah, he's got a weird scaly face under all of that leather.
And he is the boss of a subset of the peacekeepers that are trying to crack wormhole technology themselves. So he's very interested in John Crichton because John Crichton had some wormhole secrets implanted in his brain by some aliens.
So we're getting a little bit ahead of ourselves because we've missed a few just minorly important things.
Okay.
Just to lead people up into this. First, just real quickly, there's an episode called Durka Returns where we are also introduced to a new member of the Moya crew who we like to call Team Moya. And her name is Chiana. Mm-hmm. And so she's brought on as a prisoner and she's immediately characterized as very independent and very much not wanting to be contained or commanded. And so she kind of comes on as the rebellious young type, and she's played by Gigi Edgley. Mm-hmm. And she's great. And so she's on the crew at this point pretty significantly. And the other thing real quickly is that there's an episode that we'll talk about in a minute called Human Reaction, which essentially ends with John Crichton meeting a hard to classify race known as the Ancients, who are going to become more important as the show progresses. Mm-hmm. And he meets one of them who takes the form of his father, and it's an amazing episode, and we're gonna get into it. But essentially, there's some weird stuff going on with the Ancients, and John Crichton doesn't know. Some weird stuff happened with them that he doesn't know about.
Right, but so that they put some wormhole secrets in his brain.
Yeah, without him knowing.
And they took the memories out of his brain. And Scorpius finds that out, and so he wants John Crichton, and through a series of events, his plans are foiled, and his base is blown up, but by the season's end, John and Dargo are left floating out in space alone, quite possibly dead. The Moya crew is scattered to the four winds, and where do we go from here? Is basically where we're left.
Right.
So that is the plot, in very basic terms, of the first season. I think what we should do next is kind of categorize the episodes in terms of how essential they are to being caught up to where things are going into the second season.
Right.
And also what value we see in different episodes for different reasons.
So do you want to do this as going episode by episode, or do you want to go by category?
I think we should go by category. And I think we should start with the episodes that are 100% essential.
Must watches, entertaining, plot filled,
to get moments. Basically everything that we just talked about more or less happened in these four episodes. They are just distilled the plot of season one. So you have to watch Premiere. It's the pilot. It establishes the characters. It's kind of clunky, but in a cute Farscape way. If you are at all interested in Farscape, watch the pilot before you consider watching more.
And you'll get a feel for what Moya looks like and what the crew's sort of roles are. And it's a good primer for what is to come.
Yeah. You get a taste of the visual style. You get a taste of the fact that it likes to mix in humor and sometimes dumb humor with pretty heavy character stuff.
Yeah.
So the way I would say it is, if you love the pilot, you're going to love this show. If you like the pilot, then keep watching. And if you hate the pilot, you're probably not going to like the show.
Maybe you're not going anywhere.
Yeah. Because I think some shows you can't say that the pilot is a good barometer, but with this show, for sure, it is.
Yeah, it's got everything that makes a decent Farscape episode.
Yeah. The other three 100% essential episodes to watch are towards the end of the season. There are two that form a two-parter. The first of the show's two-parters, and the show goes on to do more several episode arcs, but this is the first one. It's episodes, I believe it's 19 and 20, is that correct?
Correct.
And they are Nerve and The Hidden Memory. And these are the episodes that introduce Scorpius, who is going to become a huge character later on in the show. It introduces the idea of wormhole technology as a big sticking point of the conflict of the series. And they're generally pretty action-packed episodes and enjoyable episodes to watch.
We should also mention, when we list out episode names, that this, at least this first season, for most of it, aired in weird orders depending on the region that you were in. So if you're following along with the show and you're, you know, listening to this in 2015 or onward, you can just check your Netflix or IMDb for the episode order that we're using. And basically after like the first 10 or something episodes of season one, it is equal pretty much across the board, but the episodes aired at under completely different dates in like the US and the UK. So when we talk about episodes each week, we refer to US air dates just cause that's easy for us. And we're going in the Netflix.
It's how order, Netflix does so. It. Yeah. But we talk in the episodes where we cover the early episodes, we talk about, where they are in the intended episode order. And for the most part early on, it doesn't make much of a difference. There are maybe one or two episodes where, like, two characters start to like each other by the end of it, and then the next episode they hate each other because the episodes are out of order, but that gets smoothed out. So, Premiere, gotta watch it. Nerve in the Hidden Memory, gotta watch it, if only because it's the beginning of a lot of the big plot stuff that's going to become important way later in the show.
Right, and sets the scope.
Yeah. And then the last 100% essential episode is Family Ties, which is the season finale, because it sets the stage for where are we at the beginning of season two. And also, it's a wonderful episode to showcase character interactions and kind of give you the digest version of how pretty much every pair of two characters feels about each other. And so you may not... If you have not watched the rest of the season, you may not be rewarded by that episode, but you will certainly learn something from watching it.
Right. And it's a good episode on its own, but it's also, it builds on the fact that you know these characters at this point, you know who is who and how they like each other and how they interact with each other. And we're going to talk in a bit also about this idea of pick character pairings and how all of them work in different unique ways. But that's pretty much the reason to watch Family Ties. You can't start season two without it, and it's a really good episode. It's very sad, but in like a nice, satisfying way. And it was potentially going to be the series finale before they found out that they were going to get more episodes.
Yeah. So next, let's talk about our highlights. We each picked two, and these are four episodes that, honestly, you should also definitely watch. But, you know, this, as you expand categories, it's related to how much you're willing to watch of the season. But I would say that the four that we've picked are like 90% essential.
Yeah.
Honestly. And I think each one of these four has a big plot moment that you can kind of get if you're watching other episodes, but that you should watch it on its own terms to really enjoy it as much as possible.
Precisely.
So
starting right off, I just want to do my two picks and then your two
picks? Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so my first pick for episodes that you absolutely should really watch before going to season two is DNA Mad Scientist, which is season one, episode 9. And it's essentially... It's a one-off episode, but it's a really interesting and kind of cool episode for learning about how the characters work with each other and how they deal with certain types of villains, because the show likes to introduce minor villains that tie into overall themes and concepts of the whole show. So essentially, DNA Mad Scientist is about the title, a mad scientist obsessed with DNA, who gives all of our characters the chance to find a way home, which is one of the running themes of the show and one of the basically primary character motivations for everyone, is that they want to find something that resembles home for them, be it a planet or a location or just a group of people that they want to be with. And it's a classic Frankenstein's monster story. There's a bad guy named Namtar, which is Ratman spelled backwards, which I always find charming. It's a really good showcase of puppet work, and the main plot thing that comes out of it is that we find out that Aaron's son, in this episode, is Nantar basically uses her and puts some of Pilot, the pilot of Moya, combines Pilot's DNA with Aaron's son's. And so we get a really powerful scene of her coming out of a dark room and her being sort of half transformed into a pilot-esque creature.
Yeah.
And it's some great effects work. It gets solved really quickly. Basically, Namtar's like assistant, whose name is Cornata, saves her and saves the day. And then they shrink Namtar down to a little tiny guy. So that's kind of the tone that you can expect from Farscape, is that the bad guy's going to get shrunk down into a little miniature thing, and then a lady's going to get turned into a half alien monster. Mm-hmm. But when she's cured, she realizes that she still has some of Pilot's DNA in her internally. And so from this point on, Aaron's son has a connection with Pilot that goes beyond just friendship. Like, she knows things about how he pilots.
He
pilots the ship and how science works.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So that's basically the gist of DNA Mad Scientist that I remember. Is there anything else in that episode that you really like?
I think you're right on the money in terms of the thing that's valuable about DNA Mad Scientist is that it very effectively draws on the core common motivation of all these characters, which is that they want to find some sort of home. And so that is sort of the conflict that gets the characters to argue with each other at the beginning of the episode. And it's an episode where the characters are still mean to each other, which is also maybe important to see, because they, by the end of the season, they definitely grow to like and respect each other.
Right.
But yeah, it's one of the better Monster of the Week episodes of this first season.
Agreed.
So what is your second choice?
So my second choice is actually an older episode, so I guess I put these in a weird order. Season 1, Episode 7, PK Tech Girl, which is a well-known episode. It's considered by many to be one of the first very good episodes of Farscape. It's a pretty simple plot. It essentially involves John Crichton and Aaron's son going to an abandoned Peacekeeper ship and discovering a Peacekeeper girl there whose name is Galena.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the titular PK Tech Girl. PK, of course, standing for Peacekeeper. That's an initialism that the show uses a lot. And John Crichton pretty quickly develops an attraction to Galena. And that kind of forms a pretty rote love triangle between him and Aaron and Galena. But it gets brushed aside pretty quickly. Really, the reason I like this episode is because, A, Galena's a great... Am I saying it right, by the way? I don't want to sound...
I think it's Galena, isn't it?
Okay.
I don't remember.
Thank you. Probably.
She dies, so it's not...
Well, oh yeah. I mean, yeah, we are doing that now, so yeah, that does happen. But this is the episode where she's introduced, and she does come back later in Nerve and The Hidden Memory, so it's just a really good episode for learning about...
Yeah, sorry. Should we not be spoiling things?
Well, we should be. I'm just thinking we don't want to... Well, because you already talked about those two episodes, so...
Yeah.
Galena dies in The Hidden Memory, I believe.
Yeah, I guess if our intention, though, is to be like, this is what you should and shouldn't watch, is it bad of us to... Do you think anybody would be coming to this being like, what do these guys think?
Well, I think this if this episode that we're doing is going to work as a primer for season one, then we have to talk about the things that happen.
Okay.
We can't not say
things. Here's how I'll say it, then. We're going to be spoiling things all over the place. I think we can accompany this episode in the notes or something with, like, this is the list of what is and isn't a must-watch, so that if people want that information but don't want the spoilers...
Oh, if people just want to watch the episodes and don't want to hear us spoil everything, they can just watch those and then listen to this.
Yeah.
Okay, that's smart. Okay, I'll do that then.
But we're going to play fast and loose with spoilers just because we don't feel like walking.
So we've watched this season over the last couple months, and we have a lot of plot details all over the place.
And we don't, episode by episode, we don't spoil, because we're watching it for the first time, both of us.
Right, and we, if you're following along, continuing on with us from here, we don't watch ahead, and we try not to read ahead, although Majan has had a few key things sort of revealed to him through the internet. So if you've watched ahead and you're watching with us, don't, like, tell us anything. Just don't. Be cool. Anyways, yeah, PK Turk Girl, pretty straightforward episode. Just really good love triangle stuff. And I think that the Aaron son John Crichton relationship is one of the most fascinating in this show, because it represents a very adult, mature relationship that's not seen in television a lot, because it's based out of respect and not just physical attraction. And it is the kind of relationship where these two characters can have sex before thinking that they're both going to die in space and then be rescued and have it just kind of be normal and not their entire character motivation from then on. Mm-hmm. So this is sort of the episode that spawns a lot of the interesting Aaron John stuff. And I just really like the PK Tech Girl character also. So it's a pretty fun one. There's a lot of good lines in it too.
Yeah. My first pick of the pretty, pretty essential list also is an important Aaron John episode. And that is called The Flax, which is episode 12 of this first season. And I enjoy The Flax for three reasons that are coming to the top of my head right now. One of them is it's a pretty funny episode with the side character. Do you remember the side character's name? The sort of charlatan, hilarious guy slash turns out to be a girl.
Oh, you mean Stans?
Stans. That's right. Stans is a very funny character. And this show, I think, is hit or miss with one-off characters that are just kind of in an episode and then they're gone. And Stans is one of the better hits that they have. Another thing that I like about this episode is that Rigel gets to be the hero to some extent, which usually Rigel is the one that's being selfish, or short-sighted, or he's just kind of there to be comic relief. But when he gets to be part of the engine of good, it is extremely rewarding. And then, I guess there's four reasons. Another thing about it is that Dargo comes face to face again with that theme of being able to go home, almost to the point of abandoning Aaron and John to their deaths for a chance to get a map to go home. But he chooses not to. He chooses the honorable path. So that's a great moment for him. And then the fourth and the most important thing about this episode, in my opinion, is that John and Aaron make out with one another. They do kissing things inside of a little spaceship. And that's cool.
I think all the survival elements of that series of scenes, John and Aaron in the spaceship and as it catches on fire, and other than the part where one of them hits their head and then gets knocked out and it almost kills them both, it's a pretty tight and suspenseful.
Yeah, and that episode is a testament to the notion that Farscape is not going to jerk you around for very long. If there is a character development that everybody knows is going to happen and everybody's on board with happening, then Farscape is just going to do it. It's not going to string you along for a season and a half of like, are John and Aaron going to make out? Find out next week on Farscape. They're just going to say, oh, this week they made out. Did you know? Next week, they're going to go to a planet. That's the show.
Yes.
So that episode is great. Just for that. It's a very entertaining one-off and a lot of important character moments. So I think it's a nice compliment to DNA Mad Scientist, because DNA Mad Scientist is sort of like, here's Farscape, a good example of Farscape when things are bad, then bad things are happening to these people. And then the Flax is like, here's a nice example of them all being good people to each other and liking each other.
Right. And the show balances those two kinds of show, like shows within a show, very well.
Yeah. Efficiently. The other pretty essential episode, I would say, this is like a 99% essential. We only didn't include it in the 100%, just, I don't know, just because.
Because, well, really, it's because the only essential, like, continuing the story from here on part is, like,
the last five something that you minutes. Don't even see in the episode. It's like a flashback to a memory of John's that was erased from an interaction in this episode.
Right, so it's sort of a retcon that takes place after this episode.
Yes, so there are no 100% essential plot developments in this episode. But in a lot of ways, it is quite possibly the most important episode of season one of Farscape, I would say, yes, hands down. And that is The Human Reaction, which is episode 16. And in this episode, John Crichton has a chance to go home to Earth through a wormhole. And he does. But when he gets there, things are really weird. And then his alien friends follow him through the wormhole. And they get captured by the government, just as he had been captured by the government. And things are getting really weird, and the government's starting to dissect his alien friends. So he goes on the run, blah, blah, blah. He finds out it was all a simulation created by the ancients to see if humanity was cool enough to hang out with aliens, and it turns out they're not. And, yeah, that's that episode. It's a gorgeous, gorgeous episode in terms of reframing the entire purpose of the show. Turning it from, like, how do I get home to how do I make a home where I am, essentially. And how do I learn to enjoy the people or the aliens that are around me and make peace with the fact that I may never return to the place that I thought that I wanted to be. And
it's an amazing, it's just an incredible episode. Sorry, I just wanted to come in to say, yeah, this is an incredible episode. I think if you, because this recap episode is not only recapping the show, but recapping our own podcast. So I would say if you listen to one other episode of Scape Chats that I think was particularly well done, if I'm to toot my own horn, it's actually episode 8, which is when we talk about this episode, because we spend just like an hour gushing over the themes and individual scenes. So if you are interested in this episode and you've seen it, or it's been a while since you've seen it, go back and listen to episode 8.
Yeah, for sure. And John and Aaron have sex in that episode. So again,
wowza.
Only 4 episodes after they kiss, they're boning down, and it's not a big deal. They don't really talk about it after that. So Farscape, good job for not being a jerk about that and just kind of doing what needs to happen. Yeah. Fantastic, fantastic episode. So now let's get into episodes that we're maybe not 100% as crazy about. Well, okay. Do we want to do the decent ones or the lowlights next?
That's a good question. I think it'd be nice to just do a sliding scale and do the decent ones now.
So these next episodes are decent episodes, and I think the way to gauge that is that they are not in any way essential, but if you want to watch more episodes, these are good. Is that fair to say?
Yes.
So what are your 2 decent ones?
Decent. Well, my first one is season 1 episode 4, which is Thrown for a Loss. And I had to debate putting this one on here because I would say overall it's a pretty poor episode. It's not particularly interesting, but it has a few small things that I really like. This was, I think, the first away team mission of the show, if not one of the first. It's episode 4, obviously. And away team is just a concept that I, because I watched a lot of Star Trek when I was younger, and away team missions in shows like this are basically when, oh, you know, this is the mission where a bunch of people go on a planet and a bunch of people stay on the ship. And it's a pretty good one of those. The basic premise is that Rigel gets kidnapped by some people who are trying to sell him. And what else happens? John Crichton, Aaron's son, and Dargo go on to the planet to rescue him. It's a pretty cool looking planet if you're looking for some interesting lighting and effects.
Yeah, I will say, is this the one where they had the like blue flowers?
Yes.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
It's a great episode to look at. I would almost recommend just like lowering the volume on this episode and keeping it in the background because it's just fun to look at. For that, also for the fact that once Rigel's in prison, he meets a another prisoner whose name is Jotheb. And yes, that is correct. The Jotheb puppet, if I remember correctly, was really cool because it occupies the entire room that it's in. Is it Jotheb that I'm thinking of? You know the one I'm thinking of, though, right?
That weird thing.
That thing. It's an amazing puppet, and it's, like, huge, and it's almost as it's bigger than Pilot, I think, and it's got so many parts in it, and it's a fascinating thing to look at. And there's some good Rigel lines, and there's this whole thing about, like, this isn't the Lux and Hyper Range one. This is the one where they have, like, the Rage, like, armband or whatever.
Yeah, you're right.
That's completely forgettable. I just like aspects of this episode, and it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
It's light and kind of forgettable.
I think that's the best way to say it, is that it's a good background episode of Farscape. I was not particularly crazy about it, and I would honestly put it as a skip myself.
Yeah.
But there is some fun Rigel stuff, so if you like Rigel, it's not a bad episode for that. What is your other decent choice?
Well, my other decent choice is Season 1, Episode 11, which is Till the Blood Runs Clear. This is I'm less enthusiastic about this episode even, just because it's got a lot of dumb plot elements. There are these dog people on a sand planet that's just basically Tatooine from Star Wars, and Aaron and John go there, but they have to wear these wacky dumb glasses that have, like, eyebrows on them to see things because there's crazy sun. But I mostly recommend this episode because a standout side character whose name is...
Furlough.
Let's see if we can get it. Furlough is introduced in this episode, and she's great. I think she's only in this episode. I don't think she comes back, but she's... Wow. Maybe? Oh, maybe. We don't know. Or Madonna knows. I don't know.
We don't know yet. Wink?
Wink? Wink through the glasses?
I mean, just remember, she got John Crichton's wormhole information.
Oh,
remember, so
she like took it.
That was the price for her doing the repairs.
Oh, so he doesn't have any more like physical data, but it's all in his head now.
Well, that wasn't he like his data from so the beginning of that episode, there was a wormhole around the planet or something, and he like went close to it and got some data.
And she took that. But I have a feeling she's not coming back for a while. Point is, Furlough's really cool. The episode's just got it's actually some pretty good action scenes. Some pretty good gunfight scenes.
That's true. There's not a lot of gunfighting in this show.
Yes, the couple that there are, mainly this one, and I think In a Human Reaction are the two main major gunfights. They're pretty good. And Aaron's son gets some good action scenes, because Claudia Black is fantastic at that.
And a great scene between Dargo and John Crichton being like, hey, let's be cool. Let's be buds.
Right, which is a consistent thing in this show. That one doesn't happen at the end, but a lot of times the show will end, like each episode will end with basically everybody or two characters from the show sitting in the Moya's like eating area, her dining area, and they'll just talk about like, oh, that was crazy. Anyway, here's the lesson I learned.
Right.
But it's like, it's very real. Like they talk, it's just kind of like two people talking. And they run the gamut from kind of cheesy to really full of heart, which is a lot of the show in a nutshell.
Yeah, a lot of the time you're kind of living through the whole episode just to get to that scene. Those are usually the most rewarding scenes of the episodes. Cool.
So that is, yeah, that's my second DC
episode. Check that out. So for me, I've got two episodes that I like that I think are decent. The first one here, I like it because it showcases a phenomenon that happens from time to time. Actually, both of these episodes showcase this phenomenon happens from time to time that I enjoy. You pointed out that I enjoy in shows in general, which is when characters get the chance to play characters.
Yeah, it's an acting thing.
Yeah, when characters that we've seen pretend to be somebody else, we learn something new about them. And so the first of these two episodes that I thought were decent was They've Got a Secret, which is episode... You know which episode it is? It's episode 10. You're right. And basically the way this one shakes out is, for God knows what reason, Dargo gets like amnesia or something. To the point
he tries to leave and then he gets ejected into space. Remember, he like falls through that slide and then goes into space.
Yeah, and then he comes back and he's got weird brain stuff going on, right?
Yeah,
whatever.
Yeah.
There are so many episodes that are predicated on Dargo's acting weird this week that it annoys me a little bit.
It does,
but so he's having some issues where he keeps thinking that the other crew members of Moya are people from his past, and so.
So one of the primary mysteries of, one of the primary mysteries of the beginning of this show is, how did everybody end up on Moya? Why are they all prisoners?
Yeah.
And it's an interesting thing to string you along if you're watching all the episodes like we did, and this is the episode where we find out what happened with Dargo. Mm.
And it's a pretty elegant way to communicate somebody's backstory, because we are piecing it together as the other characters are. And it culminates with, he's been mistaking John for the brother of his wife, who we find out was actually a Sabbatian, which is crazy because Dargo hates the peacekeepers and he hates Sabbatians. He's a Luxan and all this stuff. So there's a weird sort of Romeo and Juliet aspect to their cross-species love, which is the reason that her brother was so upset, and why her brother engineers her death and pins it on Dargo. So it's just it's a pretty rad way of communicating all that information and doing it in a way that is cute. So the reason that it's a decent episode is because it's all information that for the most part is expositional, in terms of somebody could just tell you the story of Dargo's backstory and say like, oh, he had a son with a Sabbatian woman and she was killed and he was blamed for it, and good, you're done. And you can understand Dargo and his arc for the rest of the show. But if you want to see that information presented to you in a fun way, then They've Got a Secret is a great vehicle for that.
Also, this episode is only slightly essential because we find out in this episode that Moya got pregnant.
Oh, very cool.
Plot point that we didn't mention in our main story is that Moya got pregnant in this episode, and then we spend a while being like, oh, when's the baby going to come? And then it comes at a perfect time, which is when everyone's close to death and on the Gammic base running away from Scorpius. Uh-huh. And then she has the baby, and then in the finale, Aaron names it Talon. And it's like a cool warship with a lot of guns.
Right.
Is the gist of that. But that doesn't have to do with this episode.
Yeah. So that's the first of my two decent ones. And the second is towards the end of the season. It's episode 18. It's called A Bug's Life. And the premise is that Moya's flying along and they get boarded by a peacekeeper commando party who's transporting some strange cargo, which turns out to be a virus that can transport between organisms and take them over and tries to lay spores in them. And we talked in the episode that we did on it about how it's basically John Carpenter's The Thing is the plot, right, which is fair. And it's the reason that I didn't rate this episode any higher. But it's, you know, if you haven't seen, as I hadn't seen, John Carpenter's The Thing, it can be entertaining, just like, oh, there's some tension going on. And we get to learn a little bit about Aaron and about how the peacekeepers work. And we get to see, of course, John Crichton's peacekeeper accent, which is good fun. You get a lot of that in Nerve. But if you didn't get enough of it in Nerve, then feel free to watch this episode.
Also, feel free to check yourself because, oh my god, it's so bad. If you have seen The Thing, or if you're interested in more of my specific comparisons to that film, because I've seen that film, to this episode, then we talked about this episode in episode 9 of Skate Chats.
There you go.
Fun fact.
So those are the decent episodes. And I think the way to think about them is they're episodes that we think are okay. Definitely, like, have them on in the background episodes, for sure. All four of them you don't need to pay that much attention to. If you are somebody who's like, you're a high-powered business executive and in between meetings you want to respond to emails and have Farscape on in your office. Because that's how I envision our listeners.
Is that they're all high-powered CEOs?
Yeah, they're all like drinking coffee. They have like a conveyor belt of coffee mugs going across their desk and they're just drinking them as they listen to this.
What a life. Hey, Majan.
Yeah.
It's time to get weird.
Is it time to get weird?
It's time to get real weird.
By weird, do you mean like cool weird or like bad weird?
I'm talking cool weird, motherfucker.
Okay, cool weird. So you're talking about our Dark Horse episodes, right?
Not the Katy Perry ones, you silly mother.
Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness. Okay, but you guys so Dark like Horse that episodes. In your corner offices, huh?
Oh, I know you, you do. Exec- don't, you, you don't you stop fucking your secretary for this. Dark Horse episodes are basically episodes that we... and Magellan's dead. These are episodes that we kind of enjoy for silly reasons. And if you have been following the show and you, or if you know us personally, then you know that these episodes appeal to specific aspects of our personalities. So this is kind of a self-facing category. Yeah. But these are the episodes that we think like, oh, these are good. Or if you're in the mood for some really weird stuff and you can stomach some boring or bad parts, then you should watch these episodes.
Yeah, I think the way to think of it is the decent episodes are kind of like you can just throw those on. And the Dark Horse episodes are like, we think you should pay attention to these, but for a very specific reason.
Yes.
And so that some people may not agree. Some of these episodes people could definitely say are skip worthy. And I think we'll say to some of each other's episodes that they're skip worthy, but we like them for specific reasons. So what, Alan, if I may ask, may I ask?
I guess.
Okay. Now I feel like I should have a better question. What are your Dark Horse episodes, fella?
Well, I'm so glad you asked. My first Dark Horse episode, I can't find the wiki page for this. I'm dying. I love to have my wikis open at all times. Just more continuity stuff. We really are big fans of the Farscape Encyclopedia Project.
It's
where we get,
it's wonderful.
It's where it helps us stay on track for plot summaries. It gives us fascinating trivia that we discuss in each episode. And it helps us keep things organized when we're talking about a lot of episodes like we are right now. So my first one is, there we go, Season 1, Episode 15, Durka Returns. Now, this episode we mentioned earlier as the episode that introduces Chiana to the main cast of the show, which is the main reason to watch it. But it's also just kind of interesting because there's a lot of interesting dialogue between her and John Crichton, and I love all of that stuff. They have a weird relationship that's not based in any sort of romance. It's sort of like physical attraction mixed with respect and empathy, which is a lot of the show, and we're going to talk about major themes soon, but like, I don't know, it's just, it's hard to recommend, because a lot of the Durka stuff is like, I was incredibly frustrated with it when we discussed this in our Escape Chats episode.
The Durka stuff meaning, so the premise of this episode is that they are boarded, that happens a lot where weird people board Moya. Yes. They're boarded by a guy who, what's the species, Chiana's species? The Nabari.
There you go.
A Nabari guy who's transporting a prisoner, and that's Chiana, but he's also transporting an essentially psychically lobotomized former peacekeeper named Durka, who had tortured Rigel for a large portion of his imprisonment. And we thought, this is part of the thing that bothers me a lot about this episode, is that Rigel's plot in PK Tech Girl is that he finds the corpse of Durka, the man who tortured him, and he's able to have some sense of closure. And then this episode is like, no, well, he's not dead. Here he is. And he's kind of being nice, but then he turns bad halfway through the episode.
Because of course he does.
Of course he does. And so
that stuff is not great.
Yeah, that whole plot is not. Like, half of this episode is annoying.
Yeah, and I think the reasons to watch this are to watch Chiana and John Crichton sort of work their way around Durka and Salas, who is the guy who imprisons both of them, or mentally cleanses Durka and imprisons Chiana. And there's not a lot to say about it. It's an okay episode. There's some dumb stuff in it, but I just really enjoyed Chiana and John Crichton being cool.
For sure.
Now, my second Dark Horse episode is one that I have very strong feelings about in retrospect, although I didn't have a lot to say about it at the time, which is Rhapsody in Blue, and that's Season 1, Episode 13 of the show. This is basically Zahn's episode. This is all Zahn all the time, and all Delvians all the time. So we talked at the time of recording this that Delvians are hard to do makeup for, and so this episode is like infamously very expensive and took so long for them to create. And it shows, because it all takes place on a Delvian ship, and there's a lot of incredible, incredible imagery in this episode. And we learn a lot about Delvian biology and their culture and their religion, or their faith, rather. And it's just, it's such a dense episode, and the reason that I have it as a dark horse, a dark horse.
That's what this whole show is.
Yeah, pretty much.
They just spray you with nonsense, like really cool stuff.
The dark horse. Oh, we want to make that. We got a name. We got to make something that keep that name.
Yeah, I'll lock it away.
Thank you. Get that domain. it's an incredibly dense episode. Is why we kind of found it problematic at the time.
Yeah, it's very hard to follow the plot.
And I think if you were to sit down and just keep all other distractions away and just listen and think hard about this episode, it's not impossible to get. But, I mean, there's all this whole stuff about John Crichton's former girlfriend, Alex. And
that's true.
Yeah, and she's introduced. And then there's a Delvian that takes her form on this ship and tries to confuse him. And Zahn is fighting with an evil priestess. And there's this whole thing about Delvians merging with other Delvians. In a really cool effect where they kind of squish their bodies together. And then Zahn merges with John and they kind of learn to empathize, and that's great. It's a wild episode. And I think it's really interesting if you're interested in some sci-fi goofiness and some just lore. Because it's a lot of talking about what Delvians are and what the politics of their society are.
Yeah. So it's the kind of episode that you should watch if you're like, yeah, you're invested in Farscape. Totally. Because it definitely rewards that. And it is probably one of the more gorgeous episodes of this season, I think.
Absolutely.
Speaking of this season, what is your third dark horse?
Oh, well, I'm glad you asked.
Good.
Okay. Yes.
I'm glad that you're
this
glad.
This is my third dark horse is Through the Looking Glass, which is season 1, episode 17.
Tell me about it.
Well, I will.
Good.
Essentially, it's about Moya attempting to do this thing called Starburst, which is Farscape's version of warping, hyperspace warping. And she, because we have classified Moya at this point as a female, she can give birth, essentially warps into herself and creates three alternate dimensions of herself that are represented by a yellow, a red, and a blue Moya ship whenever we see exterior shots. And John Crichton spends the whole episode bouncing between the dimensions, trying to sync up where the rest of the crew is in each of the dimensions, and getting them all to essentially try to reverse the ship at the all three versions of the ship at the same time. So there's a loud dimension, there's a bright light dimension, and then there's a laughing gas dimension. And so it's a lot of fun character pairings, and it's a lot of just like the trick of using lighting to be like, oh, this is a different set. This is a different dimension because this one's yellow, but it's really still Moya. So they kind of use the Moya set to its full capability in this episode.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of good, like there's a lot of great Rigel moments in this episode. And it's funny. It also features one of my singular favorite scenes in season 1, which is basically Crichton and Aaron's son using sign language to describe their crew and trying to communicate with each other in the loud dimension. That's an amazing scene, and you should find that if you haven't. Yeah, other than that, it's just an okay kind of.
Yeah, it's this episode and Rhapsody in Blue, both written by David Kemper, who in the first season was a writer and I think also a producer, maybe, and goes on to be the showrunner, the executive producer of the show.
Yes.
But both of those episodes have the same quality of being really dense at first and kind of hard to wrap your head around, but rewarding if you are fully engaged.
Yeah, that's how I would describe this episode for sure. This one's a little bit easier to swallow than Rhapsody in Blue, though, just because you're just following John Crichton
right
the whole time. Excuse me. Majone, what are your three dark horses?
Well, I will tell you right now what they are. And I'll start with the first one. You're welcome so much. The first one is the one that happens earliest in the season, is the one I'm going to talk about first, which is Exodus from Genesis. The way Netflix.
Oh, God, Netscape rather. Let's do it.
The way Netflix lists it, it is episode 2. So it's the second episode that we watched. And I think it's the first episode that we, I mean, obviously it was really early in the season, but it was the first episode that we really loved and got a lot out of in terms of discussion. And The premise is basically that we're on Moya and some kind of alien organism, bioorganism thing has invaded, and it's able to create copies of other organisms and slowly kind of take over Moya in that way. But then they, this is also when we learn about, what's it called? Sebation. Is there a name for it? The heat death? Is that what it's called? Heat death?
There's a name for it. I don't know what it is.
Anyway, basically, Sebations are cold-blooded, and if things get too hot, then they die.
Yeah, or they go crazy, right? They turn into, like, they go mad or something.
Oh, yeah. That might be what it is. The bad things happen, and they can't be saved from it, essentially. And so the ship's getting hotter, and Aaron's dying, and John Crichton's able to solve everything by talking to the alien, the weird alien monster.
Yay.
So the thing that's great about this episode, for me, is that it is the first instance of a hugely important theme. I think probably the theme that we hammer on the most as being the most essential thing to take away from Farscape, which is that a lot of the time you solve your problems through communication, and that is sort of the surefire way to get out of a pinch, and to come to understand other beings is by talking to them.
Yes.
So that's what I appreciate about this episode, is it introduced us to that theme. And then the other thing I appreciated about it is that it ends with a very pretty iteration of that thing where Farscape ends every episode with a cute conversation. It's the one where John and Aaron are on that weird, like, sun deck balcony. And yeah, there's, like, cool space stuff going on outside. I don't remember what they talk about, but I remember it being cool.
She basically says, hey, you're going to promise to kill me if it happens, if the, like, heat death thing
happens. That's right. And he doesn't respond.
Yeah, he's like, maybe, I don't know, this is a hard question. That's a great scene, yeah.
Yeah. So, it's one of those episodes that is, like, probably, you can't really ever say that Farscape has a true bottle episode, but that is probably the closest that season one gets to a bottle episode, I would say.
I think it's actually smart of them that they made a Moya-only episode this early, because it establishes that, like, yeah, we don't consider it a bottle episode if we're only on the ship, because Moya is a very dense, complex ship with a lot of interwoven parts.
Yeah.
And so if it's a whole episode that takes place on Moya, it's not necessarily a traditional bottle episode in that they use it to save budget or to minimize on set cost. It's just... Mm-hmm. It takes place in one place.
So I would say, honestly, there's nothing essential about this episode. But if you just watch the pilot and you're kind of like, what should the next episode be that I should watch? Just watch Exodus from Genesis. It's not going to contain anything that you need to keep track of. It's just a good self-contained episode that introduces some major themes into the show.
Also... Yeah. Only episode that Brian Henson directed.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. He's in a much, much later episode as a character, which I'm excited for. That's like season four. Mm. But this is the only episode he directed, and then he continued to work as, like, co-showrunner and also just a puppet master.
Interesting.
Ugh, what a title.
Puppet master. I think pup...
You have another one, though, puppet, right?
Puppet keeper would be a good title, too. Nice, I do have two more, as a matter of fact. The next one that I want to talk about is one that you could easily say skip, but for some reason I really like it. So it is the epitome of a dark horse, which is Thank God It's Friday Again. And this is the episode where John lands on the planet.
Season 1, episode 6.
Season 1, episode 6, thank you. Or Dargo goes first to this planet that is a... essentially, it's a farming planet. Where everybody is in a weird trance, and they are working all the time, but they always think that it's Friday or Space Friday, whatever. Right. And they're essentially farming plants that help create peacekeeper weapons, is the revelation.
Right.
And the thing that I like about... I think it's a couple things that I like about this episode. One is that it's on a planet, and you don't get a ton of those in season 1 of Farscape, being on a planet that I can think of. You get, I don't know, maybe like 8 episodes, really.
Yeah.
I really like the character design in this. The sort of red alien people, I think, are really cool. And then the leader, the white alien, I find really fascinating. And her performance is just so ethereal and weird that I can't help but enjoy it.
She's like freakishly good amongst an episode that is mostly okay. You're like, right. Whoa, she's way better than the rest.
So it's mostly for her that I think this episode is worth it. And I like the setting of it and stuff. But I think
her name is Volmay, by the way.
I think most people would say skip this one, and I don't know that I could really argue not to, except to say that it's her performance is really cool. And it's just nice to be on a planet like that.
You know what I remember about this episode that, like, frustrated me at the time, but I kind of appreciate in hindsight? Is that things just kind of happen, and you're supposed, like, it doesn't start traditionally. Essentially, Dargo is really angry. John's like, oh, I gotta get out of here, and he just lands on the nearest planet.
Yeah.
And so he's there for like a while. Like, he's just on this planet, and you're like, what's John? Like, that happens in the span of, they do a cut, and then they're like, oh, it's been like months or whatever. Mm-hmm. John's just been here, and he, like, you know, knows a lot of people and is part of this community a little bit. And so that's just this kind of early hint that the show will establish that the characters are doing something that maybe seems out of character. But it makes sense if you kind of hang on for the ride. Yeah. And come to
understand. The other thing that I just remembered about this episode that I like is that one of the subplots involves Aaron's son doing cool science stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is an episode where she learns that she can be cool and do science, which is a big part of her arc as a character.
Is learning that she can be cool and do cool science?
Yeah, basically do non-killing things.
Yes.
Then the last of my 3 dark horsies is towards the end of the season, and it is actually right snug in between The Hidden Memory and Family Ties. Kind of a weird diversion side quest in between those two huge plot episodes.
Yep.
And it's called Bone to be Wild. And basically, they get onto an asteroid and there's plants and there's a monster, but really the nice lady is the monster. But then really the monster's the monster, and the nice lady's also a different monster. And she eats bones. And Zahn's a plant too, did you know? That's weird. She doesn't have bones. And yeah, that's kind of it. it's an episode that the best I can say about it is that it surprised me when I realized that I was enjoying it. It starts off pretty lame. And it's fairly obvious that they're going to do the switch of like, oh, the nice girl is actually the monster. But then when they swap it again and they're like, well, the guy you thought was the monster is actually monstrous for a different reason. He's not a mindless monster. He is a very conscious, guy doing bad things, which is a monster in its own way. That makes the episode worth watching, I think. And it honestly, I think it is nice to have that rhythmically, have that break in between The Hidden Memory and Family Ties to just kind
of it helps the pacing.
Have that diversion. And there's some great Scorpius Krace interactions in this episode as well.
Oh yeah, that's the reason I enjoyed this episode. And there's 2 minor things that I also liked. This is the first episode of the series featuring, can you get her, the actress's name? I would appreciate it. Francesca Buller, who's
Ben Browder's wife.
What's his name? Ben Browder's real life wife. And she plays a different alien character in every season for 1 episode. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that we see her, and she's playing the main alien on the planet. I'm going to call her
Emily.
This is the episode with Bernie and Emily. Mm-hmm. Because they can't, they like apostrophes and they can't just write names out because that's sci-fi. And so I like that. And I also like, because she has a lot of great chemistry with Ben Browder, obviously. And I just like the last scene where she is brought into Scorpius's command and is kind of like, oh, maybe she's still hungry. Maybe this is weird. And it's a good characterization moment for Scorpius.
Yeah. So those are our dark horses.
Welcome to the Moya Bag for Scape Chats Episode 12, the Season 1 Recap. I'm Alan, doing another solo Moya Bag this week, and we got quite a few lovely comments on last episode. And just, I always forget to introduce the segment, but basically the Moya Bag, for those who don't know, is the part in the middle of the show where I, Alan, and sometimes Magellan come in. Since we recorded these episodes so long ago, I come in, you know, the day before the episode goes up, and I read our feedback and our comments, and I just kind of talk about the episodes. So last week's episodes, we got a decent amount of feedback exclusively this week from the Farscape subreddit, reddit.com/r/farscape. And this is just a couple of comments from the episode thread that I put up there. And you can always leave a comment on those episodes when they go up. With the podcast on the threads. Threads, podcasts, you know how it goes. Moving right along, we got a comment from Lazy Nothing who says, thanks for sharing. I had no idea these existed. I'm always happy when we just find new listeners or people just discover our show. And I always have this weird fear that they're going to like come into it like, yay, Farscape podcast, and then be disappointed that it's not the best. But I think we're probably the best Farscape podcast in existence. There's no reason we can't be. So thank you, Lazy Nothing, for getting into Escape Chats. Mr. J Handel says, tell Magellan that he needs to sit closer to his mic, which is a great piece of constructive criticism. I think we've mentioned before that Magellan recorded a lot of these episodes that last summer when he was in DC and his living space was very small, so he didn't have a lot of room to get close to his mic. And his setup is a little awkward, but that is a thing we are definitely trying to work on more when we record new episodes, is like, just sit right up in the mic like I am right now and just talk directly to the viewer, to the listener. I'm sorry. That's like my most common mistake ever in this show. And it's impressive that it's been 12 episodes of doing this Moya Bag thing and I'm still messing it up. Actually, how long have we been doing the Moya Bag? Do people know? I think since we started posting threads and getting comments. So like after 3, but you get the idea. Roombot, a frequent commenter, said, grats on finishing season 1. I've enjoyed listening to every episode of your show, and of course we'll be hoping that you'll keep up the pace of one episode per week, even after your release schedule will catch up to your watching schedule. As for your post-season overview that you're releasing next week, I wanted to ask what has surprised you most about season 1 in general so far. I know you did have some basic conceptual knowledge about the show going into it. Did your views change, or contrarily, did they strengthen? What character differed the most from your initial view of him, her, or it? Anyways, thanks for the show. I'm off to completing a watch of Buffy the Vampire Slayer for the first time. So I'll tackle this in order. Yeah, it's the one episode a week thing is going to be continuing for the foreseeable future. We're actually recording another episode this weekend. God willing, and the creek don't rise. So we are hopefully going to start continuing to be ahead of the release schedule for a while. Which is good, because that guarantees that y'all get it once a week, every week. For a postseason overview question, so I think Magellan and I pretty much came into the show with equal amounts of knowledge about the show from beforehand. I mentioned several times in the early episodes the Danielle Riendo skip list that I found on the internet. But that was only a few months before we started the show, or a few weeks even. And we didn't really have that much knowledge of the show other than it was just a sci-fi show that people like in weird corners of the sci-fi community. And it's Australian and there's puppets. That's literally all I knew. And there was a white guy and then there was a bunch of puppets. Like I've seen, you know, promotional pictures of John Crichton like surrounded by like Rigel and Dargo. And I'm like, oh, all these people look really cool. And it's Australian. And the Henson Company worked on it. And I didn't know it was Brian Henson specifically. And I didn't know like anything about what it was. But I still have really fond memories of the first night that we watched the pilot over Skype together, and we were kind of watching it as a litmus test of like, is this going to be a good show to do a podcast about? And like, are we going to continue with this show? And just from the first moment when John goes through the wormhole, I was like, I'm like wowed by how cool this is and how weird and mysterious this is. And like meeting all the characters and as someone who's watched a lot of ensemble television shows, I can say that when I saw his like introduction to Aaron and them, I immediately knew, like, okay, John and Aaron are going to be together in some capacity because they're the two most humanoid people and they're both attractive. And, you know, you can kind of tell, like, this is the cool thing about Farscape, is that it depicts a world that is very similar to a lot of sci-fi television that you've seen before, but then inverts it in a lot of ways. So I had just come into it with the assumptions of, like, the puppet's going to be the comedic relief and Dargo's going to be the serious one. And obviously those tropes are constantly flipped on their head and inverted in really creative, interesting ways, which I think is like my favorite thing about the show. John, I believe, had most of the same knowledge pretty much majorly spoiled on a lot of stuff just from reading the wiki and his natural tendency to like read like what he's like, I'm gonna read one thing ahead and then whoops, the whole show, because that's like you go on a wiki and you're like, when does this character do this? And then it just says like, oh, and this character dies in this episode. And so that has led to him knowing a lot of stuff. But that, you know, he wasn't doing that when we started. That's just happened over time. And what character differed the most from your initial view of him, her, or it? I would say Dargo, because Dargo always seemed like the mean guy with a heart of gold. And he is kind of that, but I also think that his character is one of the most fleshed out of the gang. Him and Aaron's son specifically are the, like, two people that seemed like one thing and have completely flipped. I think The Way We Weren't, I forget if that's a season one or season two episode, I should probably know that. The episode where you learn about Aaron's son's backstory really changed what I thought of her as a person. And, you know, since then I've just constantly been like redefining who these characters are in my head. So yeah. And thanks for the show completing Watch of Buffy. I misunderstood that comment when I first read it, so I replied to you like, hey, Buffy's really good, but season one's a little rough. But you, a Roombot, were mentioning that you've actually watched way more of it. And you're just finishing it for the first time. And yeah, the end of Buffy the Vampire Slayer is, it'll fuck you up real good. So give me a follow-up sometime if you do finish it between this episode and the next one or whatever. I'd love to know what you think about the ending. And then Hot Decor, sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong, says, hi, I'm really enjoying these, keep them coming. Thank you, Hot Decor, you are lovely. That is all the feedback we got this week. As always, you can email us, scapechats@gmail.com, or post in the Reddit threads at reddit.com/r/farscape. And this is a really long episode, so I'm not going to bog it down with any more plugs, and this way back has gone a bit long. So I don't actually know where this is in the middle of the episode, because like I said last week, there's not a good like middle spot in the recap. So you're going to know where it is. But right now, as I'm recording this, I'm doing it before listening to the episode. So we're mixing things up. And I'm going to work more and more every week, of course, on equalizing stuff and being sure our mics sound good. The more we catch up, the more the show gets caught up to where we are recording wise, the better it'll sound and be as like an audio experience. But thanks again for listening, and enjoy the rest of the season one recap, and we'll see you next week for season two.
Now, let's round out the discussion of season one with the lowlights. The skipsies. The ones that you really don't have to watch at all. And in a way, we hate these episodes. Although you can't. I don't think you can hate an episode of Farscape, necessarily.
Yeah.
Because they all have some charm to them. But these are ones that we would actively say, you don't need to watch this.
Yeah, and John and I are both the type of people that don't like to skip episodes of any television show that we're watching, right. So we obviously watched these and did episodes on them. I consider both all of these podcast episodes to be relatively boring. Well, specifically for the ones where we discussed these, just because we were kind of like, they're dumb and we're confused and angry. But it's also fun to hear us just be like, why? Tell me why this is so stupid. So my first low light, my first definite skip, let's see if I can do the thing you just did where you had them in order. IET. Wow, was that season one episode two, really?
No,
Oh, it was episode three, according to this.
IET was aired, we watched it as episode 7.
Oh, weird.
But it was intended as episode 2, which cast new light on your opinion on Exodus from Genesis, which is like, oh, it was cool for them to do it that early, because really they had meant to do IET before that.
Yeah.
So looking at this episode, especially with the eye that it was supposed to be the second episode of the series, is like, come on, guys. Try putting a better foot forward.
Yeah, don't get us going with this. This is not a fun episode at all. Basically, the crew has to land in like a swamp planet, which is basically Earth, but it's southern, and everyone has weird... I remember they all had weird like chins or something. They had like weird
ears,
necks.
I think.
Yeah, something like that. And he stays on a planet, and it's essentially the plot of E.T., where the son is like, oh, this guy's cool, we like him, even though he's an alien, and the mom is going to like give him up to the authorities, and then he gets away. And Dargo gets captured, which is like become... I almost wanted to list it in our common themes for the season, which is Dargo gets captured. This is like one of the first examples of that. Yeah. It's just a frustrating episode because it feels like it's not moving forward any character motivations. Because at the worst, when a Farscape episode has no sort of interesting plot, you can at least say like, oh, this is the one with the cool aliens, or oh, this is the one where we learned this or this about our the main characters. And there's just nothing to take from this episode other than sometimes the person who is like, you know, John, maybe now John's the alien and now everyone else is normal, and it kind of reframes that. But it's just a boring, ugly looking, very dark, poorly lit, weird episode. It's not worth watching. It's a wet fart. It's bad. Don't watch it. What are you doing? Don't look at that. My other just skip it, just piece of poop episode. Oh god. Back and back and back to the future. Which I'm gonna have to ask you again, is this episode 5?
Well, let me tell you, it is. We watched it as the third episode.
Okay, so that makes it seem a little bit better, but back and back to back, blech. I don't like that title much. It's a dumb like movie joke.
Yeah,
but there's like a crazy, what's her race, crazy lady?
I don't remember what it's called, but the point is that it's a near cousin of the Luxan race, which is what Dargo is.
Oh, they're the Alonics, by the way.
Alonics, thank you.
And her and her assistant, or the lady's name
No, thank you. I don't need that knowledge. This is how much I didn't care about that episode.
Continuing the theme of Magellan deciding to sometimes break into episodes to tell me that I'm wrong about something, usually during the intro.
Whoa, what?
Is a thing I really like. Remember how during every intro, I'm like, hey, it's this, and you're like, actually, it's this.
That wasn't me saying you're wrong. That was just me.
Oh, you're sassing me right now?
I want to reject the term Alonics from my brain. You know what I mean?
But what if they come back? What if they're like ultra important?
I don't know if they will or not, but I can relearn it later. That's what I'm saying.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be mean to you. I was trying to insult the episode.
Yeah, the episode's bad. It's not fun. The end of it, I remember being really confusing. A ship goes away and then explodes. It's another bunch of bad effects.
Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Dargo gets seduced by that lady whose name we don't even bother to look up.
They're doing a whole Groundhog Day thing.
Yep, where John keeps... Yeah, that's the only remotely interesting thing about it, is that John keeps living this moment again and again, but it's nowhere near as interesting as the, like, they're doing a Groundhog Day thing would lead you to believe.
Right, exactly.
It's handled badly, and there's not enough sort of character interaction for this one to be worth watching. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm going to say don't watch Back and Back and Back to the Future.
You don't need to watch it. I have two other episodes that you do not need to watch.
You
just don't need to watch them. And I will say these episodes I'm actually going to name out of order, because the one that came first I hate much more than the one that came later. And I want to end this on a low note.
Okay.
So the first episode that we're going to talk about here is called Jeremiah Crichton.
Yes.
And that is episode 14. This is the episode that a lot of people point to as, like, one of the worst episodes of Farscape. Easily one of the worst, if not the worst, of season one. It's not disgusting, to watch. You know what I mean? I think there are other episodes that are less entertaining than this one. But the issue with it is just that it does not matter at all to anything. Because it introduces a whole... Basically, the premise is that at the beginning, John gets frustrated. And he's like, I hate you guys, you dumb aliens. I'm going away. And then he flies away and he gets stranded on... This is what you were thinking of, I think, when you were talking about Thank God It's Friday Again. Or, yeah. Where he... It turns out that he's been on this planet for months and everybody else had left. They accidentally abandoned him.
I think something similar happened in Thank God It's Friday. Like, it's similarly like he left and was on a planet, but not for as long.
Yeah, Dargo was down there for like a week or something.
It was. Yeah, Dargo was down there. Anyway.
So John Crichton takes his escape pod and he's like, I'm going for a walk. And then Moya accidentally starbursts because she's pregnant or something. And then they're like, John, no, oh no. And they spend months trying to find him again. And then when they do, he's fishing and he has a big beard and he's part of a tribe.
He's kind of part of a tribe.
Yeah, of aliens that look like humans. And it's like, guys, why?
Continuing one of our least favorite trends of the show, which is that sometimes when they want to do an alien race and they can't afford just like masks or interesting appendages, they just give them weird clothing and it's like, hey, look, not humans.
Yeah, but it's annoying because it detracts from what is interesting about the human Sebastian connection of like, why do our two races look so similar? It's crazy.
That's a plot point, in fact.
Yeah, it's like,
whereas with this, it's like, oh, they're weird, they're aliens. It's a point of interest.
Yeah, humans. But nobody comments about how these guys look just like humans and just like Sebastians. So that's annoying. And then it just sets up this whole cast of characters in the camp that, in the tribe that, like, we don't care about, really. I think a lot of people hate this episode because it's just completely inconsequential and the plot is predicated on John Crichton being a whiny baby for no reason.
Yeah.
But it's not detestable as a watching experience. Like, I was going, when we were doing our watch through, I had heard a lot about how, like, Jeremiah Crichton is a terrible episode, and so I was kind of dreading watching it. But when we watched it, I was just like, this isn't good. It doesn't necessarily deserve vitriol, but it definitely doesn't deserve to be watched. So that's that.
I was just going to say about this episode, I agree, I think the worst thing about this is that, it just doesn't affect anything. Like, all of the tribe politics, they go really deep on them. And there's the only kind of redeemable moment of this is Rigel is considered a god amongst these people. But then they kind of don't handle that super well. Mm-hmm. And it only gives Rigel a couple minutes of, like, fun I'm a god feelings before they are whisked away back to Moya.
Yeah.
Although I will say that this was a really fun episode of Scape Chats to record, because it was the one where I was trying to defend aspects of the episode, and you had a lot of questions about the plot that just kind of, I was like, well, I can't answer all, because there's a lot of like fundamental, this is so, what were they thinking?
Right.
Moments. Yeah. So, Scape Chats episode 7 is a fun one.
I like that we're reviewing our own show.
Yeah. Why not?
No, I like it. We've been talking a lot about episodes of Farscape, and I don't really know how to get into this except to say that this is an episode that I hated a lot. I hated it.
Barf.
I hated watching it. I hated talking about it. It was bad. And do you know which episode that is, Alan? Just by process of
elimination. I'm just random guess.
Okay.
Because, yeah, there's only one episode left of the season. Season 1, Episode 8, That Old Black Magic.
Ugh.
Ugh, even the title is just, it's forgettable.
Now that I'm thinking about it, we watched That Old Black Magic and IET for the same episode of Scape Chats.
Yeah, that was right around the time when we took like a 4-month break or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
From recording, and then we came back and we're like, yeah, oh, and just came back to hell. And a few weeks later was Jeremiah Crichton, and we're like, is this it? Is this how our life is?
Are we dead?
Are we dead? Is this it? But it did redeem itself. But this episode did not. No.
I really did not like this episode.
It's a bad one.
I don't know if you can tell. The thing, and I don't even remember specific moments that I didn't like, but basically the plot is just there's a weird space sorcerer who makes John and Krace fight. And that's his thing.
Yes.
And that's it. And it's,
but they don't even like fight.
And it's just needlessly confusing, and it robs a lot of the suspense from the John Krace story because it puts them together in such an artificial context, and then it doesn't actually resolve or advance that plot at all. And yeah, it suffers from all the sins of these other episodes that we've been talking about. It's hard to follow. It's largely inconsequential. The characters that come in briefly are kind of dumb and poorly realized. And yeah, I really didn't like it.
The B plot is completely forgettable. And worst of all, as someone who absolutely loves what they've done with Krace in the later episodes of the season, this episode does the mortal sin of taking the show's most interesting villain to that point and sort of, I don't want to say pussifying, but just kind of declawing their background by being like, oh, he was an orphan and like he was sad and his brother and him got forced to be into the military. And that concept on its own is interesting when it's used later as Scorpius, or when Aaron's son forces Krace to relive all of his personal memories and view them all in the Aurora chair, which is a late season one plot point in A Human Reaction and Nerve. But here it's like they're revealed in a really awkward way, and it just kind of, it's like some really bad kid acting. And I remember being so mad that like, you can't give us the Crichton versus Krace thing this early. This is the wrong time to do it. And it's handled terribly. And yeah, this episode, I would absolutely say just skip, because you'll like what they do with Krace later if you don't watch this episode.
Very true.
It's poop from butt.
So that's our rundown of how we would categorize the episodes of season one of Farscape. Alan, what else did you want to talk about?
Just real quickly, we can kind of go through these relatively fast. I wanted to reiterate or reframe some of the trends and themes that we've noticed throughout the show Farscape and throughout Scape Chats that we've picked up on. Mainly because I think that these have been coming up enough and that they're going to come up enough in the future that they're worth just sort of stating and explaining here. So the first main one was this theme of communication and how talking things out solves all problems, which I love. That's like, that was my first like thing that I loved about this show, I think, was in the episode that you talked about as your dark horse, Exodus from Genesis. Like, wow, they totally can just fix problems. Because as someone who, like I said, watched a decent amount of Star Trek and has watched a lot of sci-fi shows, I'm used to people ending things with a gunfight or ending things by like blowing up a planet. And so often on this show, communication is such an essential aspect of the story and an essential aspect of people's motivations, because it's a world where all of these aliens don't speak the same language. And that's interesting when it is handled correctly, because it means that it kind of gives us this picture of a world where we're going to meet other people, other races, but we're all going to still be able to talk it out. Like it makes it less scary. It makes the future seem way less scary, which I appreciate. But the kind of tails to that head is the Magellan's translator microbe update of the week.
It's my like angry comic book nerd thing that, well, actually, like how did blah 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 blah, because in the first episode in Premiere, when John is first taken onto Moya, Dargo is kind of yelling at him in incomprehensible Luxan gibberish, and then they inject John with a thing that puts microbes in his blood that serve to translate the speech of other aliens so that he can understand them. And that is, you know, I harp on it
because it's an easy plot contrivance, and I figure that Farscape is the kind of show that, and it's true, Farscape is the kind of show that doesn't do that very often, where it forces you to just accept something as true. And so they talk about the microbes a lot, but I like to make it a game of how can I break the episode partially along the lines of, oh, how did the microbes translate this or that? But really just my attention to that speaks to the fact that Farscape is a show that is so focused on communication and on solving problems or looking at scenarios through the lens of working with others. Farscape is so focused on that this plot contrivance is something that I always am reminded of whenever I'm watching these episodes.
Right, and I think the only episode that handled it particularly well was actually A Human Reaction, right, where when all of the gang is, or when, you know, some of the gang is brought onto fake Earth, they're speaking in their own languages and the humans can't understand them, but John's understanding them, and it's this really great moment of, like, lost in translation. Like, he can empathize with them because he can communicate, but the humans can't because they can't communicate.
Yeah. It's sort of, the way I think about it, one of the big things that I harp on, and Alan knows this, so this is something about us, prior to this show, to watching Farscape and recording Scape Chats, we've been watching television together for a while in this sort of parsed out fashion where we'll watch, you know, two episodes a week and talk about it. And we thought, oh, now that it's time to watch Farscape, maybe we can record it and turn it into a show. But prior to Farscape, we watched a couple shows. We watched Twin Peaks, and mainly we watched Angel and Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And a thing that I really harped on once you got to the mid-seasons of Buffy the Vampire Slayer is that the magic in that show is completely inconsistent. Like, there's no rules to magic whatsoever. So a big thing for me in sci-fi and fantasy shows is, like, does your universe have rules that you're following? Because that is what rewards the viewer, is when they understand what the rules are. Because Buffy was great about following the rules of vampires in small instances where you're like, oh, yeah, he can't give her CPR because he doesn't have breath, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so this, the translator microbes are a big part of Farscape's rules. And so I'm just trying to see if, like, are they following the rules that they've set out for themselves? And part of the thing that makes A Human Reaction such a wonderful episode is that they really lean into, like, okay, this is how things work. And we establish this in the pilot. So that's my that's my prolonged defense of something that if I was listening to this show, I might start getting annoyed with myself. Of like, why do you care so much about, why you gotta ruin it with translator microbes? Give it a rest. But that's my defense.
We all have a cross to bear, and that's yours.
Okay, well.
Another interesting theme that we have been picking up on, especially in the later episodes, mostly starting after PK Tech Girl, is this idea of this show's portrayal of adult relationships, mm-hmm. and just like sex positivity in general. Because, like we were talking about earlier, Aaron's son and John Crichton's relationship is very much a relationship of respect and compassion, but it never feels like your traditional TV romance at all. Mm-hmm. Because Aaron's son is never, is only, I don't think she's ever, like, I don't know, it's never like a crush. It's just like, oh, we're two adults and we like each other and we're both attractive, exactly. And we're gonna make out.
It's never the situation where, you know, John Crichton's, like, in love with Aaron's son, and he's like, oh, should I tell her? What do I say? Neither of them is ever particularly shy or embarrassed around the other person. It's just sort of in moments that feel natural and make sense, they let their guard down a little bit, and they kiss or they have sex or whatever.
Right, and it's not even just them. Like, very early on, I think from even episode one, it's implied that Zahn and Dargo have some sort of compassionate, potentially romantic relationship, at least in a minor way. And that is appreciated because that is another one that never becomes anything. It doesn't have to be, because it's just that they have a lot of respect for each other and they are clearly attracted in some way. Mm-hmm. But that's also just because Zahn and Delvines in general are very confident sexually, and she knows how to use her body to get things, but not in a sort of like seductive way, but just in like, I can get naked in front of a dude and make him feel really uncomfortable, and I just don't care. She does that in one of the episodes, and it's pretty great. And Rigel talks about his children and how, and so like everybody has their moment of like, we have had intimate relationships with other people, and it immediately helps us empathize with all these weird alien races. Mm-hmm. And how they all have their own sorts of weird relationships with other people. Real quick, I just another theme that I put down here that I don't think we really need to go. We've already talked about a lot. It's just this idea of finding home, and how everybody has their own home that they want to go back to. You know, Zahn wants to go back to the Delvian planet and be a priestess. Dargo wants to go back to his wife and son. John Crichton wants to go back to Earth, although maybe he doesn't. And Rigel wants to be ruler of his planet again, although he doesn't know if he can be. And then we have Aaron's son, who's kind of the screw in this whole operation, because she doesn't have a home anymore.
Yeah.
Or at least not a traditional
home. You know what I just realized, man?
What's up, girl?
The show's called Farscape. Because these characters, they're always far. Right?
Well, yeah.
They're never where they think they want to be. They're always distant from it.
Yeah, and scape refers to a lot of things, be it escape or, well, that's the only one I can think of.
So there you go, high school English teachers.
Take that, The Great Gatsby.
You're doing you proud.
We're so good at this. I just added this last one here real quickly that I wanted to just talk about, because this is more of a Scape Chats thing than it is a Farscape thing. Rockne S. O'Bannon, who was the show's showrunner for its entire run, and also
was he the showrunner the whole time?
I'm gonna say yeah. You know what? I'm gonna say it.
I don't know if that's true.
He was a high up. He was a very high up, and he directed some episodes and wrote some episodes. And he's considered by many to be like the creator and like one of the heads on this show.
Yes, he is. Yeah.
And he has worked on a lot of shows. He worked on, is it Stargate? SG-1, I'm going to say.
I think that's true, yeah.
And he worked on Alien Nation, both the film and television versions. And he's just, every time we do an episode and we read the background information on the Farscape Wiki, there's usually a quotation at the bottom of each episode from Rockne S. O'Bannon, usually pulled from a DVD commentary where he says like, this was my favorite episode for this because of this. And through those and through just like light Googling, we've kind of formed this character of Rockne S. O'Bannon in our heads. And it's just, he's just this white guy who really likes sci-fi and clearly has a lot of respect for the genre, but he also just appreciates very specific, minute things that sometimes clash with what we like about the show. Mm-hmm. And it usually just leads to us joking about like, really, Rock, like, what's the Rockne S. O'Bannon thing of the week? What the hell did he like? Because it's clearly not anything traditional. Like, a lot of times he just likes people improvising decent lines. Not even great lines, but, like, that was a joke. That was a joke. Uh-huh. And the quotation of the week will be like, Rockne S. O'Bannon said this line from Ben Browder was amazing. And it's like, Rockne.
I think it's similar to what I was saying about Ben Browder earlier, which is, like, we give him shit, but we love him. I think we have a soft spot in our hearts for Rockne S. O'Bannon for creating such a gloriously dumb show. And dumb being a sort of sublime word.
Yeah, dumb in the nicest way possible.
Yeah. Dumb meaning very, very smart. Yes. So we like him for that. And it's sort of a friendly like, what kind of crazy thing is he saying this time? Old Rockne. Also, his name's Rockne, so it's easy to...
Yeah, how do you... Rockne S. O'Bannon. What a name.
Get out of town. Go like, solve a murder or something. This guy.
I pretty much Google him, like, every single week while we're talking. I'm just like, what's Rockne S. O'Bannon? He's got a great Twitter account. He's fun. And he's been talking a lot lately about the new Farscape thing that's going to happen. So he's great. Keep up the good work, Rockne.
Yeah.
Mr. O'Bannon. That is it for our trends. The last thing I wanted to ask just real quick as we head out for this week on Scape Chats is we're going to be starting season 2 next week.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, Magellan, what do you hope and think and know is coming in season 2 and 3 and 4 of Farscape?
So I just hope that it keeps on keeping on because I really like this show. I just want to say, I think it's a wonderful blend of really deep character storytelling and lighthearted sci-fi weirdness and just heavy, heavy stuff from time to time. So I kind of don't want it to change that much. And I know it's going to get generally better as we go through season 2 and then get into season 3. I want everybody to be back together again. I really didn't like how season 1 ended. So I want everybody to hang out one more time. And, two things that I kind of know about season 2 that, talk about. One of them, from what I understand, episode 5, The Way We Weren't, is considered by many to be like the best single Farscape episode.
Interesting.
Because it like reveals something about Aaron's son, something that she did or some place that she was or whatever, that is like, whoa, that's crazy good.
So do you know what the thing is?
I do. And I'm not going to tell you.
All right. Because you can hear it.
That would be, that wouldn't be
cool. That would go against the spirit of this show.
Exactly. But from what I understand, that's like a crazy good episode. Another thing, this isn't the second thing, but another thing is that this season, it looks like we're going to start getting some 3-part episodes. And I think generally speaking, the 3-part episodes are good.
Definitely.
And then I don't think we see Scorpius and all that stuff again until like towards the end of the season. So I kind of want to see him again, but we're going to have to wait a while. Let me just make sure that's true. What about you? What are you looking forward to? What do you know? What are you thinking about?
I have been making a big effort to not look up a single thing about what's coming soon.
That's really smart.
I know, like, broad, like, okay, so this, the way this show works is that they made 4 seasons of it, and then they made it's a miniseries? I always forget, because some people consider it a movie, like a long, like a 5-hour movie, but it's also a miniseries called Peacekeeper Wars, which concludes the plot of the show. And so I know the, like, general setup for Peacekeeper Wars, just, like, very broad, like, oh, it's this and this. Spoilers, it's a war between peacekeepers and someone else. So I know that, but I don't know anything else, and that's, like, part of why I'm so excited to watch this show. Because, like, when we watched Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel and Twin Peaks, all of those shows, I, you know, would either reveal minor things to you in the case of Twin Peaks or just ended up finding out things because of this sort of wiki-obsessed culture that we live in and this, the way that we watch TV where we can watch it now and try our best to not ruin anything. But inevitably, if you do any Google search for like,
what?
Hey, when does Aaron's son, you're just going
to get the Buffy complete. Wiki was, we love the Buffy Wiki the way that we love.
Shout out to the Buffy
Wiki. The way that we love the Farscape Encyclopedia Project. But the Buffy Wiki was way worse about embedding spoilers in its background and trivia, because it'd be something like, you know, Xander ate peas in this episode. He would later go on to eat peas in season 4, episode 6, where he also got his arm chopped off by Angel. It's like, Jesus Christ, guys. I didn't want to know that yet.
I didn't need to know that. And it's, I mean, these are user-written wikis, so it kind of is like, oh, there's no quality.
Yeah, I think the Buffy fandom in general, there's a bigger assumption of, like, if you're on the Buffy wiki, then you've already seen the show twice, and this is, you're going through it again, so you already know everything that happens.
The Buffy subreddit was also that, and I haven't even touched the Farscape subreddit because No.
I haven't either.
I can't.
But Farscape, I think, is more of a show that people will watch once or twice.
It's short enough.
Yeah. It just generally seems a little more cult in the way that people don't expect you to have seen it. I think Buffy the Vampire Slayer is pretty entry level in terms of cult television. And Farscape is kind of like advanced studies. You know, if you're watching Farscape, then you're a nerd or a geek,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. So that was my thing, and so that's why also when we do background information for Farscape and each episode of Scape Chats, Magellan reads them because he has taken a dive and decided that if there ever is, and there have been, significant plot spoilers in the Farscape background information, he's said he's willing to read those. And tell me and vet the background information.
Yeah, I go there so you don't have to.
Yes.
You meaning everybody. Should.
Yes. You, me, and Dupree. So and then in terms of just things I want to see from the show, I really want to see more puppets. I feel like I remember all of the major puppets that were in this first season. And I love the Henson Company. I've been a fan of them since I was a very young child, and I think that was one of the things that attracted me to the show the most at first. Mm-hmm. And also just stuff like how it deals with gender and sexuality is incredibly unique and ahead of its time for the year 2000, and the 2000s where most of the show was on. And I don't know, it's so unique, and I want that to keep happening. Like it's sometimes when we watch shows like this, it's really easy to tell how they would market a show like this to people. Mm-hmm. Like with Buffy, it's a show for young people. It's got teens falling in love. It's got drama. It's got vampires.
It's got that kind of sexy Vampire Diaries. That's just a thing that, like, people love sexy vampire shows.
Yeah. And with Farscape, even now, I feel like I still have trouble pinpointing what I would, like, advertise to people about this is why you should watch Farscape, other than it's a fairly subversive sci-fi show with really great puppets.
Right.
But I was telling Magellan recently that I watched, because they do reruns of the show on, I think it's Pivot, because it's a TV channel, okay. And I saw a commercial where they were like, oh, we're going to do a 24-hour marathon of the show and then end it with Peacekeeper Wars. And just that commercial was like my first insight into how people think about this show, which is like, oh, it's really funny. Like, it's basically a comedy sci-fi, which I get, but I think that kind of doesn't get across the fact that it's also very deep and thought-provoking, yeah, in ways that not a lot of other shows like it are. And each episode is a great story. So I'm looking for more one-offs, mm-hmm, more great one-offs, more great puppets, more great character moments. I just want to keep watching the show. And I want to watch it.
Well,
and it's perfect.
Have I got the solution for you? Because next week, we're going to watch two more episodes of this show.
Oh, can we please?
Yeah, and they are Season 2, episodes 1 and 2.
Magellan, I can't watch the episodes unless... this is like one of my weird kinks. I can't watch any episode of any television show for Scape Chats unless you tell me what the episodes are according to the Netflix.
Strap in.
Oh my god,
I'm ready. Get yourself ready for the fact that the first episode is season 1 episode... Season... Oh no! Oh no!
Oh god, we're on fire.
Season 2, episode 1. Mind the Baby. It's kind of like... when a new year starts and you're still writing 2014 on all of your homework, that's what just happened to me.
And then you're like, it's 2014 and I'm still doing homework. What's happening?
Season 2, episode 1, Mind the Baby. Crichton, Aaron, and Dargo are stranded in an asteroid field while Scorpius searches for them. Their safety depends on Krace, who is nearby in Talon.
That's too exciting.
Yeah, they're going to resolve all that stuff. And then episode 2 is Vitus Mortis. Dargo searches for a dying Luxon, Neelam. She's a holy woman who wants Dargo to help her die, but then Neelam sees a chance to alter her fate.
Oh my god.
So I don't know how that's going to go. Maybe it's going to be good. Who knows?
Maybe. And maybe this podcast will continue to be good.
Maybe.
With the click. That was perfection. Thank you for listening to this season 1 recap of Farscape and Scape Chats. Be sure to come back next week for our discussion of season 2. We appreciate your listen. If you want to follow us on social media, you can do that. We have an email if you'd like to send us feedback. It's scapechats@gmail.com. That's chats with a Z. And we always appreciate emails there. We're always checking that. And yeah, you're really cool. And we're really cool. And let's all be cool together and watch Farscape. This is Scape Chats, somewhere in the universe. Whoosh!